Okay, we are, of course, in our study of James, and for the benefit of those of you who were not able to be with us last week, just by way of kind of quick review, earlier we were discussing the whole issue of who wrote this letter. Last week we spent our time, most of it, talking about who the letter was written to, and we had come to the conclusion in that part of our study is James really only identifies his audience as the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. In other words, those who were dispersed. There's a couple of different possibilities for his audience, but most likely, though what he wrote applies to all of us even today, his original audience, intended audience, was most likely Jewish Christians of his day, those that were scattered in the persecution and so forth. So as we were looking at that particular part of it, okay, then if that was his original audience, then why is this particular letter so important to us today? Okay. Well, if you go back and you look at a lot of what James talks about, in fact, as he begins this letter, the very first topic that he brings into it is suffering, trials, and tribulations, and so forth. And much of the letter itself deals with the issue of Christian suffering. He talks about the dispossessed, and we asked the question as we were finishing up this whole idea of those who were dispossessed, those who were far removed from their homes, their land, in other words, their lifestyle was completely changed and interrupted and so forth, and they were in a hostile environment being oppressed. James's intention is to provide wisdom for those dispossessed Christians that are suffering in all kinds of trials. We then ask that question, does that describe us today? Okay. And we talk about it from the standpoint of the fact that we today, you know, we live in really relatively, comfortable lifestyles. We have nice homes to live in, cars to drive, we have all the latest gadgets and everything. We look at ourselves in the office and we go, so why would anybody think we're suffering of anything? And I think that the reality is that though as we look at it that way, we don't really fit into that concept of the dispossessed and, the oppressed and so forth. But, as Tommy talks about, he says, we may do well to learn to live as though we were dispossessed because it may not be long before we are the dispossessed. And I shared, and I'm just going to share it again for the benefit, again, of those who were not with us last week, a section out of what Tommy writes about that. That particular topic. He says, again, although we may not be among the world's dispossessed, we would do well to learn to live as though we were, because it may not be long until we are. There are ways other than economic oppression to be on the fringes of your culture. American society has done a drastic turnaround in the past 50 years in its attitude toward Christian faith. Many of us grew up in a world where both our faith and our scriptures were respected, even by those who did not themselves pay much attention to them. In our lifetimes, we have seen such activities as daily Bible reading in public schools go from being normal to being criminal. Our society is rapidly turning not just away from a Christian worldview, but against that worldview and the faith which underlies it. Whereas Christians once battled indifference toward Christ, we are now facing increasing hostility toward Him. Tenets of basic morality are now not only ignored, but are responded to in anger from those who refuse to be bound by any moral requirements. If these trends continue, and there is every reason to believe they will, then we who believe will continually find ourselves marginalized by our culture. Already there are those who actively seek to suppress what we believe, which means that if they get their way, we will become the oppressed minority in our society. That being the case, we not only can find something of value in James, we desperately need the wisdom he offers. We need his wisdom for the dispossessed every bit as much as did his first readers. And so, you know, I think what Tommy's pointing out here, you know, should be obvious to all of us, you know, that the trend of our society is moving more and more toward anti-Christianity. And again, it's not just a passiveness, it's an aggressive move against Christianity. Because we stand in the way of, you know, the issues that they want to, you know, force on society. And so we're going to find that becoming more and more aggressive. And just in the last 2 weeks, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, the situation in Houston, and that, by the way, has not gotten any better. Okay? Where the mayor of the city is demanding that that these ministers turn over their sermons. Well, they came out and said, well, we don't want their sermons, but we want any emails, any communications, anything that they wrote, anything that they discussed concerning any of these topics. And it has to do all with, you know, homosexuality and the gay rights agenda and all those kind of things. And so they think that, you know, we're not going to try to get their sermons. But and the mayor apparently, you know, trying to deflect the outcry against it, said that their sermons, when they enter into the public arena, their sermons are fair game. Okay. There are two ministers in Iowa, I believe it is, who own a marriage, kind of a marriage thing that they do, and they just the Supreme Court knocked down the state's, you know, defense of marriage and said that now they have to allow gays to be married. And so two men went to them and asked them to marry them. They said, no, we won't do it. And there's a local ordinance that they are being threatened with jail time for because they will not perform gay marriages. That's where things are going. Okay, it's not just out there. It's no longer just the bakeries and the photographers and the caterers and so forth. Now they're going after ministers, okay, in our churches. And so we need to understand that, you know, as James is writing these things back then, 2,000 years ago, to those who were oppressed, we need to understand there's a tremendous amount of valuable wisdom here for us today, because that's where we're headed, folks. That's where we're headed. Okay? And so this morning, we start to kind of really get into the text a little bit more. Let's look at the message to the dispossessed. This is kind of generally speaking. The message to the dispossessed is... And we're going to talk about a couple of things that generally speaking, it describes. First of all, he talks about this message being, first, don't cry about it. Okay? The fact that we may be or becoming more and more dispossessed and facing the trials and the tribulations. Again, notice that he begins verse 2 of chapter 1, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. And he's saying, you know, don't whine about it, that we have to face those trials of many kinds. Whining about those difficulties is not for those of faith. Right? And I don't think that James's message, and this is a particularly curious statement that he makes here, and a lot of people misunderstand it, I think, when James is telling us, count it all joy when you face trials of many kinds. And so people question, so wait a minute, does that mean I'm supposed to be happy about all the stuff that I face and the turmoil, the struggles that I face in life, the trials and the tribulations? No, I don't think that his point is that we should be jumping for joy in the midst of the trials that we face. Okay? But we should also not allow those trials to steal away our joy. You see, there's a huge difference between those two. Okay? For me to be jumping around, hilariously laughing and carrying on because of the struggles and the hardships that I face, somebody with a right mind would look at me and go, they need to be put away somewhere. Because that's not normal. Okay? But at the same time, we have to keep it in perspective. And when we understand and remember that we're going to face problems in life, whether it's being oppressed or whether it's just life, okay? Life happens. And sometimes when life happens, it's not good. That's life. Now, are we supposed to jump in joy and be, just laughing and giddy about the bad things that happen? No. But we cannot allow those difficulties in life to take the joy away from our heart and who we are. See? I think that's his main point. James is, if you think about it, is calling on really the words of his older brother Jesus. Some of the things that he had to say about dealing with strife and trouble and turmoil in the world. Turn over to Matthew chapter 5, for example. And let me get somebody to read verses 11 and 12. Part of the Beatitudes. Look at what Jesus has to say there. So what is Jesus saying there in this particular beatitude? I mean, people are persecuting me, they're reviling me, they're saying all kinds of terrible things about me, and I'm supposed to do what? Rejoice? But how do I do that? What's the perspective that Jesus wants us to remember as we're facing those kinds of things? Okay.
It's not so much what you're going through. It's just you're going through it because you belong to it.
Okay. All right. That's a part of it, but it's not what you're going through, but it's where you're going to. You see? Yeah, it's happened before. In other words, it's not unique to you. You're not the only one. You're not the first one to ever have to deal with these problems. You're not going to be the last. Okay? So there's a lot of things that Jesus is saying in that very short statement, is saying, look, don't let the fact that you're facing these hardships, steal your joy. Wes?
You know what we call a sign of consolation?
Yeah.
It's a purpose. You realize what the purpose is.
Yeah.
Once you realize that, it kind of helps you get through it.
Helps you go through and face the turmoil or whatever it is you're facing. Remember, you're not in alone. You're not the first one. And, hey, where are you going? Okay. I think that one of the reasons that we get so distressed over the problems that we have is because we lose sight of, where we're going and the fact that, whatever it is we're facing, it's only temporary. Okay? But we tend to look at it as, hopeless because, how am I going to get through this? And we don't see an end to it. Well, there's an end to it. Okay? Eventually, somewhere, there's an end to it. Because we ain't getting out of this thing alive, okay? And then, great is your what, Lynette? What did he say? Great is your reward where? In heaven. You see? Great is your reward in heaven. May not get much out of it in this life, but you have a great reward to look forward to. Look over in Luke chapter 6, verse 26. Get somebody to read that for us. Luke 6 and verse 26. Okay. Did you get that? What does it mean when someone says woe to you? What does that mean? What does that term mean? What did it mean to them?
Beware.
Okay, yeah, beware. You know, be careful, because that's not a good thing. What is he saying here? Look, if people in the world are saying good things about you, you better beware of that. Why? He goes back and he says, you know, your fathers did the same thing to the, what kind of prophets? The false prophets. In other words, those who weren't teaching and holding to God's truth. They spoke well of them. Okay? So, how concerned should we really be when people are speaking well of us from the worldly standpoint? Luke 6, verse 26. So, you know, being spoken well of by the world is just not a good thing. And it may indicate that we don't look very much like Jesus. Okay? If the world is speaking well of you, then you need to take a good hard look at what you look like. But on the other hand, look over in John 15. Let me get somebody to read verses 18 through 20. John 15, 18 through 20.
If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, and I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also.
Okay. So what's Jesus saying here?
Are you saying that, you know, I've never committed a sin? They persecuted me.
Okay. Yeah.
What's the thing they're going to do?
And if the world is hating you, then you are in what? What? Okay, in accordance with him, good company. Okay? You're in good company. Right? They hated him too. And the reason they hate you is because you look like him. You see, a big part of this, and the wisdom that James is wanting us to understand, he's sharing with us, you know, again, is the wisdom from his older brother Jesus saying, look, you need to change the way you think about what's happening to you in the world. Because if the world is treating you well, then there's something wrong with that picture in your relationship with Jesus. If the world is giving you a hard time, that's a good thing. You see, and we so often got it backwards, don't we? See? James is saying you gotta rethink this. And so again, how does he reconcile this whole idea of saying count it pure joy when you face these trials? Well, that's how. That we recognize that if the reason I'm facing these trials and this oppression is because of my relationship with Jesus, then that's something I should be glad about. Okay. Because I'm in good company. And I'm looking forward to the reward in heaven that he's promised to me. But if, on the other hand, the world is just kind of sitting back and, you know, liking me and welcoming me in right along, you know, with everything and all the other garbage going on, I've got to take a really good hard look. Okay. So that's how, you know, we look at this and say, look, being rejected by the world should really be an honor. If you think about it, it should be an honor, and thus then we should and can count it all joy. Okay. Again, it requires us to change our thinking. Go back to Romans chapter 12, 1 and 2, where Paul tells us not to do what? Do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world. Don't live like the world is living, but instead do what?
Transform.
Be transformed by the
renewing
of your mind. Change the way you think about these things, you see? And that's what it's required of us. If we really want to be able to count it pure joy when we face the trials and tribulations and so forth, we got to change the way we think about these things. Right? And stop looking at it from the worldly standpoint and look at it from the Jesus standpoint. Okay? So number one, then, don't cry about it. When we face the trials and temptations and turmoils and so forth, don't whine and cry about it. Okay? Consider it pure joy. Number two here that we need to understand is even when you're oppressed, God expects you to live responsibly. Okay? So not only should we not be whining and complaining about the oppression that we might face, okay, but God expects us in the midst of that trials and tribulations to live responsibly. Okay? In other words, others that are behaving badly is no excuse for failing to treat those people in a Christ-like way. Okay? No matter what you're struggling with in life, others should not have to bear the brunt of that. Okay? And perhaps maybe you've experienced, maybe you've done it, maybe you've had it done to you, you know, that somebody's dealing with issues in their life, and you feel like, well, don't take it out on me. You know, I didn't do anything. Why are you taking it out on me? And they, you know, just, you know, they're having a bad day, and so everybody else is feeling it, you see. And I think part of James' message that we're going to see is going to be, don't do that. There's no excuse for Christians to behave that way. If you're having a bad day, you see, don't spoil everybody else's day. Behave yourself as a Christian. And we can come back and say, well, but you don't understand what I'm going through. That's not the point. The point is, whatever we're going through, if we think about it properly, okay, we keep it in proper perspective, we should be able, you know, to count it joy. We don't then have a reason to dump it on everybody else. We have to understand that we don't get a bye in the Christian walk in life because other people are behaving badly. Okay? In other words, just because somebody else isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, it doesn't give us a buy to say, okay, well, then I'm off the hook. I don't have to act like a Christian in this situation because they're not. I mean, if that's in the Bible somewhere, I wish somebody would show it to me because I can't find it anywhere. Okay? And I've looked. Okay? I can't find any kind of exception, you know, that allows us to behave badly because other people are behaving badly. It's just simply not there. In chapter 1, verses 22 through 25, look at that particular text. And it's probably one of the texts that you're most familiar with in the book of James. Okay, James 1, beginning in verse 22. Look at what he says. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does. Okay? So, you know, what is James's point there in this particular part? It doesn't do us a whole lot of good to look at God's Word and say, that's how I'm supposed to be. That's what I'm supposed to look like. We walk away and walk into, you know, a difficult situation and forget what we just saw in His Word. You see? And then to make it worse, we go, well, but that doesn't apply because this person's doing this. You see? I think that oftentimes what we do is that we tend to look for loopholes in the law. Do we? You know, reasons why in this particular situation it doesn't apply to me. You see? And most of the time the reason that we want to do that, if we're really honest, is because we're looking at what the other person is doing and saying, well, because they're doing this, I don't have to do this. And ultimately, what does that really tell us? Our Christianity is conditional. In other words, if I'm going to be a Christian and my faith and the way that I'm living my life is conditioned on you living the way you're supposed to, then what do I have? I certainly do not have agape, do I? Because agape is unconditional. Okay? In terms of loving other people. Okay? And so when I base what I'm doing on what others are or aren't doing, then I'm basically making my love and my faith conditional. And unless and until, you know, this person, whether it's my spouse or my children or my parents or my neighbor or my boss or my employee or fill in the blank, it doesn't matter. You know? Then I don't have to do what God calls upon me to do. Now, you know, we can sit here in the Bible class and we all go, yeah, well, that's right. Of course. I mean, that's obvious, right? But you know that up here, but when it comes time to actually doing it, that's where, you know, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, right? Okay. So, you know, we can know it all we want to, but how are we applying it? Okay. When it actually comes down to it. So, you know, again, we don't get a bye, we don't get off the hook because other people are doing badly. So even when we're oppressed, okay, God expects us to live responsibly as His children, okay? If you look over in chapter 3 of James, chapter 3, verse 1, all the way through chapter 4 and verse 12, in this whole section here, you know, James devotes a lot of focus on the problem of how these Christians are mistreating each other. Okay? So here, we're not even talking about the folks out there mistreating us. Okay? It's real easy for us to look and go, oh, the world's terrible, the world's treating us badly. Well, a major part of what James deals with doesn't have anything to do with the world. It has to do with how they're mistreating one another as Christians. Okay. And he's going to deal with that. And focus on telling us how we need to be changing that. In other words, you know, when life pushes in on us, do we start to turn on each other? They? An important question that we need to ask ourselves, because the reality is, and part of James's, you know, wisdom and his admonition is that we have got to treat one another properly no matter what is going on around us, whether it be, you know, in the world or within our own fellowship. Okay, how are we going to respond? All right. So, when we're faced with trials and tribulations and those things, the first thing is we need to make sure we don't whine about it. Don't cry about it. Okay? Count it all joy. Secondly, we need to make sure that we behave responsibly. And thirdly, being dispossessed in this world should make us more heavenly minded. Okay? As we deal with whatever we have to deal with in the world, it should cause us to look more intently at our future. Okay? Where we plan to go and where we want to be in the future. Go over to chapter 4 in verse 14 and look at what James is really kind of wanting us to be aware of here. In this particular section, actually begins with 13. Let me get somebody just to read verses 13 and 14. Who's got it? Okay. What's James' message here to us? You know, look, we go out and the context is all about, you know, us going out and making our plans without God, right? And, you know, we're going to, oh, I'm going to go do this, I'm going to go do that, and, you know, I got all these big plans, and, you know, I'm going to go to this city, that city, I'm going to make lots of money, I'm going to make wealth, and so on and so forth. And he's saying, aren't you so proud of yourself? You don't even have a guarantee you're going to be here tomorrow. You're making all these plans for yourself. And he says, what is your life? You are a what? A mist, a vapor. Okay? It quickly vanishes. In other words, in the big scheme of things, if you look at the whole scale of life itself, you know, the time life scale, you know, how long is your life actually? That long. In terms of eternity, your physical life in this world is that long, and that's it. So, when we keep that in mind, what should that cause us to do? And perhaps maybe what should it cause us not to do? Thoughts? Okay. All right. Okay.
Don't know how I made it to the first workout.
I have a reason that I was kind of smiling there. I don't know whether y'all have or not, but in our police academy, state police academy, we had a fat boy program. What they called it, fat boy program. And that meant if you were overweight, you had to do extra calisthenics and all that kind of stuff. Well, this was in the academy. You know, they're not as tough on them once you get out, but in the academy, you know. And about a week or so into the academy, the lieutenant of the academy came to me and said, yep, fat boy program. Yep. Yeah, that's what it was. But you're right, you know, you have to, and you know, that's a circumstance that you're in a lot of trials and tribulations, isn't it, you know? And so, yes, live every day as if today is, you know, I'm not guaranteed tomorrow. Chuck, do you have a hand up a moment ago? Oh, okay.
No, but I was thinking, people that won't be long to be born,
I think that, you know, the present, when we're in the present, whatever is going on, it sometimes does seem like eternity, doesn't it? You know, we don't, again, I think sometimes it's easy to get kind of distracted and we lose hope that this is ever going to change. Is it ever going to get any better? And I think, again, that when we're doing that, we're thinking in terms of in this life. See? But you know, I think even in the situation, and Rick and I have talked about this some, you know, where he's at right now. Is his situation going to get any better? No. It's not going to get any better. But where is Rick going? Okay. And yeah, it's a long time, and it's a painful process, and it's difficult for him and for everybody, but it's not going to be much longer. And according to what James says, in the big scheme of things, the pain and the suffering and the struggle that he's going through right now, it's that long. Okay? It seems like, and because we have to deal with things in, you know, in a physical material world, and we deal with things in terms of time, you know, that it seems like it's forever. But it's not. Okay. And that's part of James's message when we're dealing with anything like that at all. That you know, when we're struggling with those things, it should help us to be able to look and to realize that, you know, where we're going. And it should cause us to focus on the heavenly things. Because if we stay focused on the earthly things, what's that going to do? Make it worse. Okay. We'll make it work. But when we're more heavenly minded and focusing more on that, and we realize and keep in mind how short our time here really is, see, then that can help us to keep it in perspective. And that patience that we need at those times, that's what we really need as we wait for the Lord's return. And that's really what it's about. Okay? And so then our focus should be heavenward rather than earthward. Paul in Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, what does he tell us there? Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your minds where? On things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Okay? Set your hearts on things above, not on earthly things. Okay? You know, again, it's where are we focusing? Where are we looking? And if we ever lose sight of the heavenly things, then we're in trouble. Then we're in trouble. Because our focus becomes entirely worldly and earthly centered. Yes. Yes. Being dispossessed in this world should make you more heavenly minded. Is the third point. In that. Okay. So whatever it is that we face here, you know, if we keep it in its proper perspective, should cause us to be looking there rather than here. Okay. The more heavenly focused we are, then the easier whatever we have to deal with in this life is going to be. That's, you know, that's the kind of determination, I think, is exactly what James is talking about here. You know, you keep that focus no matter what you're dealing with, and it will help you to deal with it in a much better way. Okay. When you lose that focus, you're in trouble. Oh, yeah. Who's that? See, I'm always thinking about heaven. Wants to think about how bad things are here. Okay. Any other comments we finish up? Alright, next week, remember, roll your clocks back. Daylight savings time. We'll still start at 9:30. But if you don't roll your clock back, you'll be in the parking lot an hour early. And of course, that'll be fine too. Then you won't be late, right? Okay. Thank you very much.